You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast. Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast. This is episode 49 with Jason and Jamie. And we're continuing on this conversation we sort of started with asking the question, why does God care who I sleep with? Really looking at this question of sexuality and sort of resting towards the end of that first episode in the reality of glorifying God in our bodies. And what does that really mean? And then last week we talked a little bit about what that looks like for single folks. And Jason, I think one of the questions we need to address here is one that I've certainly had come up a lot in my ministry experience, which isn't even all that long yet. And that's generally from husbands who, you know, come up and basically the question goes something to the tune of, you know, I either lived or didn't live out the design of God as a single person, but as a married person, they've sought to certainly live that out. Yet their sexual relationship with their wife hasn't really been what they had hoped it would be, or it's been more of a struggle, or they're not able to sexually engage as much as they'd like, or, you know, those sort of things. The question comes lots of different ways, but the basic question is that, you know, why, if the design of God for sex in marriage is so good, why doesn't that translate into so many marriages, even in the life of the church? And it's sort of, I guess, the implication or one of the byproducts of that is many people have sort of given up on God's design, like, oh, well, maybe it really wasn't good. Like, we were sold a bill of goods in a sense. And so I want to real quick sort of give my how I've responded to that as a pastor, and then invite you to engage with that, because obviously as a single guy, my understanding may not be as good in that sense. So basically when that question comes up to me, how I've always responded to it is, first of all, take that husband, you know, to Ephesians chapter 5, you know, where it says, husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. And ask them the question, what does that mean in light of what Jesus has done? Well, what did Jesus do for the church? Well, he died for her. So what does that mean for you as a husband? Well, it means you get to die in the service of your wife to love her and care for her, and are certainly biblically called in that sense to do just that. And then usually then jump from there over to 1 Peter chapter 7 or 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7, where a husband is encouraged to live with his wife in an understanding way as the weaker nature, yet showing her honor as a co-heir of the grace of life so that your prayers won't be hindered, that text says. And really looking at or sort of asking the question, how are you doing that in relationship to your wife? You know, that's not a one size fits all answer. It's, you really have to know your wife to know what that means to love her and to live with her in an understanding way, you know, given her particular needs, her particular struggles, and how God has created her as a person to be. And from that, when a husband is, you know, truly loving his wife in that way and truly living with her, being understanding of her nature, the I guess you'd say intimacy fruits of that are in line with the design of God.
That's, I think, what you have done in the past, and or what you do as a pastor. I think it's a great approach, and just recognizing that, yeah, the marriage covenant is not about self-fulfillment so much as it is about self-giving. Well, this is where I think, you know, even Christian couples understanding the binding nature of marriage, understanding that it's a covenant they've entered into and that they're not just casually engaging in sex with this person. They have committed their whole lives and beings, you know, everything from socially, financially, legally, they are one. And it's in that context that becoming one flesh in the sexual union is appropriate according to God's design. And so having that larger understanding of marriage is, I think, something that probably just needs to be taught more and better in the church, for especially for Christian husbands to get this right when it comes to living with their wife in an understanding way. And that, you know, you brought up the issues of, okay, well, what happens when our intimacy is not everything we thought it was going to be? You know, you use the illustration of being sold on something and the goods, so to speak, are not delivered. And I think there is a lot of, this is actually a very common thing, just in talking with people and recognizing how everybody comes to marriage. Often it's because they have imbibed, in a sort, the view of marriage that they saw in their own home growing up. And so, you know, however their dad treated their mom, that in some sense, good for good or ill, that gave them something of a sense of what marriage is about. Obviously, that's not the final say, but that we just need to recognize people come to marriage with a colored picture of what it's going to be like based on the house they grew up in. And so when we, you know, we often will want to speak about marriage in such, you know, lofty terms and talk about how an amazing relationship it is, an amazing whole life union it is, and all that, which it is. But I think sometimes we don't talk about the hardships of marriage enough. And I think it's just good to, if nothing else, just to prepare our young married couples and really of any age. If they're entering marriage for the first time, it can be strange. And I know this is especially true for Christian women, I would say. And this is something that it may come across as a stereotype, but I would say it's more true of Christian women, that they have thought of purity up until marriage as, okay, so sex is a bad thing. Sex is a bad thing. And then finally they get married and it's like, whoa, we now aren't to see it as a bad thing. It's now this beautiful thing. And it's this weird mind shift that has to happen because, unfortunately, they were given kind of a lacking view of sex and marriage. And whereas for the guy, it can often be like this sense of great anticipation going into the marriage. And if something doesn't go exactly as they thought it was going to go, there's that sense of disenchantment. So I think that we should just acknowledge those kind of struggles when we, for instance, do premarital counseling, when we talk to young couples who are just trying to figure marriage out, which it's not as though they are the first ones to struggle with marriage in the early years. And that's something we should probably just confess, that all of us, when we first were married, you know, if we're a married person, those first few months, especially, like, there's a lot of adjustments going on, a lot of just, you could say, a lot of sacrifices that have to be made that you didn't have to make before, and changing and adjustments that have to happen in order for you to live with another person. And this is a person, of course, that you've committed your whole life to. And so you can feel a little bit uneasy about some of these changes that are going to happen in your life. And oftentimes, those changes that early on make you uncomfortable, on the long term, they become amazing changes, but it doesn't feel that way early on. But I think, so going back, Jamie, to you kind of zeroed in on, what about these people who, they talk about their struggles with intimacy early in marriage. What's some advice, some pastoral advice, or just generally some biblical wisdom that speaks to this issue? And I think you touched on it, because this is about sacrifice. It's about giving up pleasure, giving up whatever it is, that sense of self-satisfaction that people often come at sex and marriage with, giving up that view that this is about me, this is about my satisfaction, my pleasure, and seeing it as, no, this is something where God designed it so that I can be serving my spouse, and I can be giving her pleasure, giving her that satisfaction, and seeking her joy in that experience, rather than thinking, oh, this is something that I've earned because now I've waited till marriage and it's all about me, which obviously most Christian guys are not going to say it in those words, but frankly, that's probably what a lot are thinking.
Well, I think part of it is our world's sort of conditioning as well. I, you know, don't you think this kind of plays into it? Because you hear one of the most common things I hear from people outside the church, they say, oh, you have to have sex before marriage because you have to find out if you're sexually compatible. I don't know if you've heard that or not, but you hear this all the time. I mean, it's probably the most prevalent viewpoint. And what that seems to indicate, that the primary function or the primary purpose of marriage is 100% about sex.
Right. Yeah. And again, this is where it's like, okay, we're talking about a whole life binding covenant. And really, there is so much more to marriage than just now you can finally have sex, speaking from a Christian worldview. It's not that that's downplayed in any way, but it's just, there's just so much more to it. I mean, you get to spend the rest of your life with your best friend who, my take is that your spouse should be your best friend. I think, you know, how strange would it be? You're living with this person 24/7 and you're not sharing every secret. You're not making every decision together. You're not encouraging one another. They I think should be your best friend because that's a picture. Marriage is a picture of our relationship with God. And it's something where we can share this level of intimacy that really isn't there in other human relationships. Not at that level, at least. It's not to say that, you know, friendships between those in the same gender, of course, those are often, you know, those can get to be very close, and it's good to have confidants and people that you can trust very closely of the same gender. But there's something about the way God has designed men and women where they can share this intimacy, not just on the physical level, but because the man, of course, will tend to be more, you know, on the side of things where he wants to bring comfort to his wife, for instance, when she's had a bad day, and vice versa. And something about the way that a man comforts a woman comforts a man, and it's on a level that you don't have in other human relationships. That's why, obviously, this is God's design. It's his perfect idea that though they are, you know, in one sense opposites gender-wise, they actually complement each other so well, even to the level of emotional tendencies, mannerisms, you know, things like that, physical strength, all these things. There's this complementary nature for a man and a woman, and that goes well beyond sex. And we shouldn't see sex as the end all be all in marriage, because then you're sort of just getting this short-sighted understanding of what marriage is all about if that's how you see it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Really, what you're arguing is that sex is one of the fruits of intimacy, certainly not the only fruit, as you're pointing out. So, you know, good, healthy friendship is another fruit of that. But the question then becomes, okay, well, how do you build that? I mean, what are the steps to move into an Ephesians 5, you know, sort of situation? Okay, I'm a husband. I want to love my wife well. I want to have good intimacy with her so that, you know, we have good relationship, and certainly so that we have regular and constant sex, I guess is the word that many would probably think of. Because you have, so I'm thinking of one example. I had a guy come up to me one time. It was at a church working at a couple churches ago. So if you're listening to this from my current church, I'm not talking about anybody there. I think that's important as a pastor to point out. We don't use examples in the current sense. You certainly use questions in a current sense. But basically, he came up and he said to me that he and his wife had not had sex in a year, which is pretty dramatic, I would think. I mean, I'm not married, but I would imagine that's pretty dramatic. And so I asked him, you know, these questions. First of all, how are you loving your wife in line with Ephesians 5? He went on to present what, at least from my perspective, is a really good loving husband. Did all these things to support his wife, to help his wife, to encourage his wife, and, you know, even brought her flowers and did all these sort of things. And yet, it didn't seem to move the needle at all in terms of their relationship. I said to him when he was all done talking, "You sound like a really great husband to somebody else's wife." And what I mean by that is all the things he was doing was good, was very good in a lot of senses, but obviously wasn't meeting his wife's need to be loved, to be emotionally connected, to be spiritually connected. And so I guess the question is, well, so how does a husband, in a practical sense, sort of begin to build that intimacy? Do you understand the question?
Yeah, I definitely do. Great question. And so, you know, just first from what we see in scripture, obviously with Adam and Eve, the first married couple also, they begin their life together becoming one flesh. They have that physical union, and very quickly after the fall, of course, they have their offspring. But that's just to say that that's kind of a regulative or a regular part of the picture of marriage from the very beginning, is that sex would be an integral part of it. I said earlier that it's not the end all be all, but it is an integral part. And I don't want to go on the other end and say, you know, as long as you are having, you know, wonderful long conversations with each other and going on dates together, good. And having sex, that's just a bonus if it happens. I don't want to say that at all, just to be clear. So on this end of things, you know, 1 Corinthians 7 talks about the importance of, yes, having regular sex with your spouse. And it talked about not depriving one another. And I think that we don't want to be twisting this scripture out of context and understanding what Paul was getting at. So, for example, I will say there are times in any marriage, not even the best marriages, there will be seasons, and hopefully short, but in other words, not going on indefinitely, but seasons where just because of physical reasons or something along those levels, sex will be put off. And that's not, you know, there's nothing negative about that. I don't think that contradicts what Paul says. I think Paul's main point is, don't be going into marriage and then depriving one another intentionally of sex. Like that's a bad view of going into marriage. For instance, after a woman gives birth to a baby, you gotta wait some time before you have sex again. And that's, again, this is stuff where it's like every married couple knows there's these times where that happens. And it's actually consistent also with the Old Testament laws of purity, how the man was not to have sex with his wife immediately following the birth of a child, things like that. So I would just say, be careful with that 1 Corinthians 7 and not think that, hey, this means that you owe me, because again, it's supposed to be, this is for the wife and this is for the husband, you know, directly. You are not to deprive intentionally your spouse from sexual relations. And that goal, of course, is that you would grow in intimacy with one another. This isn't about, okay, you need to go through this, you know, in a sort of weird mechanical way, like I just have to go through this. It's, the goal is always intimacy and growth in your love. So with the scenario with that you describe, the man and you know, just doing all the right things per se, but it feels more like it feels more like a courtship or something like that, because there's no intimacy in the marriage. And I would say that this is probably a more common issue with within the first 5 years of marriage. This is not pulling from any data or anything like that, but just based on conversations and things like that, I would say probably it's mostly an issue in that first year, and it can go beyond that, you know, 5 years. Could be even beyond that. And it's not to say, okay, my case is really weird because we're married for 15 years or whatever, and we still have this. Just for an encouragement for those who are, if they're struggling with this early in marriage, a lot of times the, you know, intimacy levels are only going to increase in the marriage covenant. And that's, hopefully that's an encouragement. But with him, with this guy, I would say, above all, communicate. Tell her, you know, be open ears, listen to her, let her tell you her thoughts about what she's going through, why mentally or psychologically, whatever it is, you know, if there's these certain emotions that tend to come up, if there's been past abuse or something like that, that makes intimacy really hard for her, then just listen, just give her your ear, and tell her, instead of just, you know, keeping all your thoughts stewed up and kind of growing in bitterness inevitably if you're never talking about it. Tell her what you're hoping for and why you believe intimacy is such an important part of your marriage, and just seek to meet her wherever you can in terms of making things easier for her. But above all, see it as, this is an opportunity to grow in intimacy together as we work through this, and don't treat it as a, you know, I have to demand my rights kind of thing, because that really does distort the whole picture of marriage. It's not about you getting your conjugal rights in the sense of, come on, you owe me, I married you. That's just coming at it from the totally wrong angle. I would say see it as an opportunity. Look for ways to know her better in this struggle and pray together. Go to God together and encourage her in that. As the husband, I would say, as the husband, it's your role to lead in that, to not just sit back and say, man, I hope something gets better in this situation, but really to take the lead and say, look, we got to work on this together. We got to do it with God's help. And ultimately, I want to grow in our love for one another throughout this whole struggle. But listen well to her, because she's going to want to tell you things that, as a guy, you're just coming at it from a totally different way, totally different angle. And so that's why it's important for you to really listen well to her issues and struggles and not downplay them. Now, your other question about during those seasons where it's like, okay, yeah, again, I want to emphasize this shouldn't be prolonged, but it's just a matter of basic, you know, basic anatomy, physiology. It can't happen at certain times. Sex can't happen within marriage at certain times. For those times, yeah, I mean, still always be wanting to date your wife in terms of like pursuing her. Don't make her feel at all ashamed for not being physically ready for sex in those times. And, you know, frankly, there are times when it could be the guy. It could be the man is not able to perform sexually in that context. And it could be that scenario. And so it's important to be very understanding both on both sides.
I've noticed, you know, with a lot of men, there's a tendency to be sort of frustrated and sort of mad, I guess, at their wives or in situations, not where they're physically unable, but in the cases where they're just not connecting well and that's just not happening, or their intimacy is not really good, or, you know, all those sort of things. And I think it's important to maybe point out, at least my observation has been, women don't really seem to be mean or vindictive. For many women, it's not selfish. At least that's been my observation. It seems like when they're loved well, when they're cared about well, when they feel connected to their husbands well, then they actually want to engage in a sexual sense. Is that your observation as well?
Oh, for sure. And this is the thing. It's like, you know, it's God's design. That's why, you know, for those who have had this caricature of sex, that it's like, it's just kind of this weird add-on to marriage that we just have to deal with. No, it's this beautiful, amazing thing that God, you know, in his infinite mind, he picked this. He picked this as the way, as the, you know, the experience that a husband and wife would have together and grow in their love for one another, grow in their intimacy. And I think, yeah, you're going to see, I would say most couples can attest to this, that if your intimacy in the bed is going well, then intimacy in all other areas is going well also, and vice versa. In other words, they feed off each other and they help each other grow. But again, when it comes to, I just want to emphasize again, this 1 Corinthians 7, verse 5, it says, "Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." And so one of the additional reasons that it's important for a married couple to have sex is, let's just be honest, that sex drive doesn't go away when you're married. So in other words, there's going to be more and more temptations and things like that are going to creep up, and the devil is looking for an opportunity to cause a husband or wife to stumble. And if they're not finding that intimacy and sex in the marriage like they're designed to, then they're going to be tempted in all the other immoral ways that Satan will bring at them. So that's just a reminder. Let's not see it as it's not just about intimacy, and it's not just about protecting from temptation. It's all of these things combined, and it really is. It's like, you know, when you think of all the things that God has created to work well together, you know, like sunlight, rain, and all that, all the things that cause like plants to grow, for example. sex is just like that. It's a beautiful part of God's good design. When he said the world was very good, we need to see that as that is sexual union was part of that. It's not the result of the fall. It's not the result of sin. But because of sin, there's so many distortions out there. And that's why a lot of times, I would say if abuse has happened in the past, then a big part of the healing process with that is reorienting your understanding of what sex is about, because really you've been given a tarnished picture of it. And it's a very, obviously a very tragic thing that has happened on more than one level. But it's important to see that if you've been given a tarnished picture, then you need to see it for what it really is, as God's good design. And in that, I think the more you come to experience it in a positive way, your enjoyment of it is going to grow. I think it's just important for husbands and wives actually, to not bring guilt into the equation when things aren't going well sexually. I think this is probably the biggest pitfall for a lot of couples. They will begin some guilt-induced attack that essentially says, You're not living up to the marital expectations that you should be. And I think that's a very easy trap to fall into. But what we need to do again is communicate well, grow together, and seek that God-given understanding of marriage together. And when that happens, the romance will just blossom and grow.
Yeah, that's really good, Jason. It's such a helpful thing to really do episodes like this, where we just sit and talk about really practical application of what the Word of God says. And certainly your wisdom as a married man is so valuable here. And we definitely want to encourage anybody out there listening, if you find yourself in this kind of position, definitely, engage, like Jason was saying, with the design that God has for marriage. You know, look at Ephesians 5. See the role of a husband, how you are to love and pour out your life for your wife. You know, look at 1 Peter 3:7, where it encourages you to live with your wife in an understanding way. And definitely reach out to your pastor, reach out to older, wise, married men who probably been through some of these seasons or valleys, and they'll be able to further encourage and equip and help you to be the kinds of husbands that Christ calls you to be. It is, of course, our hope and the hope of all of us in Christ that we be people that live in line with the design of God. And certainly we celebrate the picture that God has for marriage and sexuality, but it only comes as we yield our will to Christ and we follow the wisdom that comes through his word for how we are to handle these things and how we are to walk and live. And yeah, it's work. Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah, sometimes it's really a challenge and you don't want to do it because it works against our own sinful human nature. And yet the fruit is, if we will do what God has called us to do, if we will walk according to the power of his Spirit in these ways, the result will be a beautiful and blessed union as we get closer and closer to the design that God has for us. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting site, or go to our website, faithunpacked.com. And if you have any questions, feel free to get in touch with us. You can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on social media. And join us next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.